Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, this is Rocky, and I want to thank you for listening to Professor Gary Lee's Parts Unknown Show.
How you doing?
The best AM, AA Masters, and Pioneers Radio Network. The best sports karate interviews, special announcements, and special surprises each week on this Tuesday night. Professor Gary Lee has a knockout punch every week for your enjoyment. Supporting the Sports Karate Museum Archives and the history in America. It ain't about how hard you get hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done. Yo, Professor Gary Lee, great job.
This program is sponsored by the American Martial Arts Alliance Foundation and Elite Publications. Everyone has a story. You just have to get it out. Visit Elite Publications at www.elitepublications.org.
Aloha, everybody. We've got an incredible show tonight. This is Professor Gary Lee, and I want to thank you for allowing me to come in your home every Tuesday night for the past 9 years with the interviews of the Sport Karate Museum History. Now, before I introduce my very special guest tonight, I've got my producer on the line. He's put us on the air for 9 years around the world and across America. I'm talking about Humpty Jesse Bowen. Are you there, sir?
I am, sir. How are you doing?
Well, I'm excited. I've been wanting to get an Olympic gold medalist on the radio show for a long time. We've got one tonight. But before we introduce him, I want to talk about what we're doing this year. We're honoring Mr. Bill Wallace, Super Bill Wallace, and you got a lot of things going on. New magazine. We'll talk about what you're doing, Mr. Bowen.
Wow. Hey, sir, it has been crazy blessed. It's been really something. You know, we're honoring Grandmaster Bill Wallace. In fact, just a few moments ago, the digital copy of the magazine came to me. It is an amazing magazine. We're featuring Bill Wallace and 12 of the people that's going to be recognized. We're featuring them in the magazine. So what we're doing is using the magazine to bring the people that's going to be coming out and supporting. We're featuring them in the magazine. It's packed with great articles. It's such a great, I'm really proud of my team for the work they do. We're looking for people that want to become authors, write your book. We have about 10 people that we're going to be releasing their book in Las Vegas. We're writing a book with Dennis Brown. We're going to have an event in D.C. Focusing on Chinese martial artists, Chinese stylists. That's going to be coming up in D.C., and then we're back in back in New Jersey. We're going to be doing a book expo with Sifu Allen Goldberg. So, you know, we're just been really great. We're really helping people to make a difference and discover their voice. You know, all these empowerment, lectures. We're getting martial artists. We're training them now to become professional speakers. You know, as a professional speaker, they can earn anywhere from $1,000 to $5,000 just speaking in front of people, especially if they have a book. So we're really opening up huge doorways for martial artists to really empower themselves and to make a difference in their communities and make a difference in the world.
Well, that's exciting. Now, tell me about the event Las Vegas coming up to honor Bill's debut of his book. What's that going to be? Where's it going to be at?
Well, it's actually going to be at the Gold Coast Hotel Casino, and that's going to be on July the 15th and 16th. And we're also going to be doing the Presidential Community Service Award at the same time.
Well, that's
exciting. Professor, this is Wolverine. I don't mean to interrupt y'all, but I was just wanting to tell everybody to please mute their phones because you can hear some background noise while Mr. Bowen's talking. And so if you're on the radio show, just please mute your phone. That way you know, there's no background noise and we can hear what our guest is saying and what the radio personalities are saying. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dean.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Dean. You have, those are some of the things that we're doing, and we're really excited about, you know, the things that you've got going on with the museum, and, you know, we truly believe, I believe in you and everything I'm doing to support what you have going on. And again, slowly and surely we see that our work is making a difference. So that's our motivation to continue moving forward.
You know what's exciting, Hanchi, is that when we first started this radio show, I know we'd be teaching America about sport karate, but now because of you, because your vision, we're now teaching the world. I mean, I've gotten calls from Finland, Switzerland, England, Saudi Arabia. It's going to be exciting in October when we honor Judge Roy Kerbin. It's going to be really a cool event. And I want to say thank you publicly on the air to all our listeners that Hanchi Jessen-Bowen's got an amazing vision of the book, of the respect that he's doing for Uncle Bill Wallace. I mean, it's amazing what you've done, Hanchi Jessen-Bowen. I'm so proud to be a part of it. I really am. So you have a great
evening. So we appreciate that. Appreciate all you guys that's up here on the 6th and everything that you guys are doing because, you know, in the end of the day, we're just trying to make a difference.
Yes, sir. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Hanchi Jessen-Bowen of Elite Publications, my producer of the radio show. Now, before I introduce my very special guest, I've got two guys that put up with me every week, and I love them to death. One of them is a NASCA world champion, and he is the one, the only great karate competitor. He is a product of Joe Louis, which actually Joe let me adopt him, and God bless him. I'm talking about Mr. Dean Pyles. Dean, are you there, buddy?
I'm here, sir.
Hey, we got a great show tonight, Dean. I mean, I hope you got your seatbelt on. Now, don't go anywhere because I got introduced the better half, or the other half, I'll say, from Cleveland, Ohio, my Yankee friend, my Tang Soo Do friend, who's a master in Tang Soo Do. He's also a Black Belt Hall of Fame inductee of the Ohio Martial Arts. Am I saying that right? AJ Sports Martial Art Museum, correct?
Cleveland Martial Art Hall of Fame.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. AJ Perry.
You.
Hey, AJ. How you doing, bud?
Good. How are you? Thanks for the nice introduction.
Well, the check's in the mail, right?
How you
well,
doing?
Well, guys, I'm excited. I've been wanting to get an Olympic-style martial artist on this show for a long time, and I finally found it. I hit pay dirt. He won a gold medal, I think, in 1992, but he has got such an incredible list. And we'll go over his listings. We're talking about Mr. Herb Perez. Herb, are you there, bud?
Yes, sir. How are you, sir? Thank you for inviting me. My pleasure and honor to hear everybody on the radio show. Thank you for having me, sir.
Well, Herb, I don't normally do this because I let the person talk about himself, but I'm gonna read something that I think is very important, and just tell me if I'm wrong. Okay, your competitive experience, 1992. An Olympic gold medalist, 1991, a Pan Am Games silver medalist, 1991, world silver medalist, 1987, Pan Am Games gold medalist, 1987, gold medalist, wow, 1987, world bronze medalist, 1986, we're going back now, Olympic Sports Festival gold medalist, 7-time national champion, 2-time national collegiate champion, a U.S. team captain from 1988 to 1999. Now, that's just a listing of your competitive career, but, you know, Herb, I'm so happy that I get to talk to you on a one-on-one basis. This program is called Parts Unknown, so I'm going to ask you some questions that, you know, maybe some people, well, I've gotten a couple of emails that wanted me to ask some questions. But first of all, let me ask you, when did you make black belt? Who did you make black belt under?
I was lucky, sir. Thank you for reading my list. You were too generous, but I was lucky to have a fortunate and long career. I started martial arts training when I was very young in New York City, and then I moved to the other side of the bridge. And one of my first instructors was Duck Kun Sun's student, and then I was very lucky that Anthony Alvarez, who was a student of Ki Chung Kim, who was one of the first Koreans to come to the States. And actually, Ki Chung Kim competed in those open events back in the day against guys like Skipper Mullins and all those guys, that generation of fighters. And then retired, and he was the 1967 Korean national champion. I received my black belt under him when I was, man, that had to be 1977, maybe.
Wow.
And I had been training since I was 9. So that was 1969 when I started, and it took me a number of years to get to it. And I continued to train with Master Kim, and I also trained with, in my opinion, one of the best martial artists I'd ever trained with was Sifu Paul Vizio out of New York City. He was originally, and I could tell stories about how he knew my father when he was young. But
well,
Sifu Vizio, I trained.
Let me share this with you. Paul Vizio in New York City took me to the Manhattan rooftop fires of the Kung Fu guys back in 1972.
Yep.
And
yes,
you mentioned
yes,
Paul Vizio. He was a great, great fighter. I think he fought Cliff Thomas, my buddy from Texas, 2 or 3 times. And
yes,
he's
sir.
One of the real Kung Fu fighters that fought full contact. And I love talking about Paul Vizio because, you know, he was a great, great fighter. Now, have you ever competed
I was going to say, Mr. Perez was talking. I in the late 90s, right before Chun Chu Kim passed away, cross-trained with him. You know, they did – there's a lot of people don't realize how many kwans they are in Taekwondo, and they did Judo Kwan, which was Wisdom Way. So that's pretty awesome. I didn't know that about you, Mr. Perez. I did follow your career, but I didn't realize that you belted under Chung Chu Kim. That's pretty awesome.
Yes, sir. I was fortunate to have a pretty good group of people. But you know, to be honest, Sifu Vizio was instrumental in my success, as well as Master Kim. But Sifu Vizio was my guiding force into the full contact arena, and he brought in some amazing fighters. And besides the fact that I was fortunate to grow up in the time when Madison Square Garden, the All-American Open with Henry Cho was going on, and I competed in that a number of times and was able to win that and meet some amazing and watch some amazing fighters across the barriers of karate, kung fu, taekwondo, tangsudo, and because it was pretty much anybody that wanted to show up and fight, as you know, could show up and fight. And I was there the year Ron Van Cleef tried to fight in 5 divisions.
Herb, did you grow up in New York City?
I did, sir. I was born and raised in New York, and then I moved. It's a long story, but the short version is I moved to the Jersey side of the bridge and went to high school, law school, and college and graduate school there. So, but I was a musician, so I was all over the tri-state area growing up and training, and I would show up at people's schools and just train with whoever was willing to let me train since I was traveling with the movement.
Do you remember Tadashi Nakamura and the Manhattan Dojo Kyokushin with William Oliver, my buddy? You remember them?
Of course.
Master
Oliver was competing
Tom
when I was
George
growing
Cofield
up.
And Fred Hamilton, Thomas the Puppet, George Cofield, those guys.
Yes.
Wow.
Well, I was fortunate to be on the tail end of that, but I was, I saw many of them, some of them, fight, and I saw their progeny fight in some of the toughest, there are a lot of tough areas in this country, but New York certainly had its share of amazing athletes and martial artists, and you got an opportunity to see them and in some cases fight with them. So I can't really complain. It was a great opportunity.
That Henry Cho's tournament was just one of the great tournaments that, was like a pinnacle, and it was one of the first big tournaments in the United States. And he had his tournament for years.
What AJ wasn't Mr. Cho's tournament part of the Big Four? There was the U.S. Championship, there was Cho's, there was the Internationals, of course, and then there was the USK Nationals.
Well, there was Kiwon Kim's tournament too in Washington. That was Joe Louis fought there, and a lot of the greats fought there.
Mitch Barbaro was tough because Master Cho, Grandmaster Cho, was a very tough competitor himself. So his competition drew in a lot of good fighters.
Right. Well, you know, Herb, let me ask you a question. You know, I really became, I guess, a big fan of yours after the WAMAC. Is that what I said? WMAC Masters with Hakeem Hoffman and my buddy Chris Casamassa and Christine and everything. How did you get that? Did you audition for that or did they pick you?
No. What happened is when they were coming up with the concept, it was a fortunate time for me because I had just won the Olympics and I came back and three things happened. You know, I got a call from an agent that met me in Barcelona and then brought me back home, and I got offered a movie part. I got offered a television show, which was WMAC Masters. I got offered a modeling career, and then I got offered, believe it or not, the UFC, the first UFC tournament. They offered me to fight in that. So people saw that I had won the Olympics. I was the only American. And so I got these phone calls. But fortunately or unfortunately, I was in law school, so I turned down a number of them, including the modeling thing. And then I the UFC is a very funny long story, but the WMAC Masters, they asked me to be in it, and I didn't shoot the pilot because I was in school. And then I went to meet them, and I said, you know, I'm busy, I don't want to come. And then after about a four-hour conversation, they convinced me to join the show. But the reason I joined the show was they said, we have an action figure. I said, oh, okay, I'm in. Because I don't want a doll of myself so that when I get older, I can give it to my son or daughter. So it was it was an amazing experience. I got to train and meet with some amazing martial artists, some of whom you've mentioned, Hakeem Alston, Chris Casamassa, Hian Nguyen, Eric Betts, just to name a few. And then the women on the show were amazing as well. Murmur Chen, Christine Banyan Rodriguez. And so we had a good group of young athletes and martial artists and budding actors, or at least we thought we were, and we were treated like rock stars. So it was a great opportunity, and one of my favorite things I've done.
Well, you entertain a lot of people every Saturday morning. And speaking of Christine, I got Christine and Don on the show next week. Now,
super!
You know, I'm excited about it. I'm gonna make it official tonight. We're gonna be honoring you in October at Roy Kirby's event. And we're going to make you a history general, and you're also getting the Bill Wallace Fighting Award. And so we're very honored to do that, Herb. Now, tell me a little bit about your music career. What do you play?
I'm actually better at music than taekwondo. I started playing guitar when I was five, and I had taken it in Catholic school with the nuns hitting me with rulers because I wouldn't practice as much as I should. And then I was fortunate to I had a decent ear. By the time I was 15, I was playing in nightclubs in New York City, sneaking into clubs to play professionally. And my band, when I was about 17, we got kind of discovered, and we started opening up for Twisted Sister in different venues around the tri-state area because their agent saw us and liked us. And so from about 17 years of age to about 24, I was working five or six nights a week up and down the East Coast and having just an amazing time playing music and meeting people. But then I had to make a choice at 24 whether I was going to pursue a music career or pursue a dream for the Olympics. And so I chose to pursue a dream for the Olympics. And that was when I decided to stop playing and just play. But I currently play in a bunch of bands out here for fun. And I'm just having a great time. It's my true passion, I write a bunch of music, and I produce a bunch of music, and later this year I have a bunch of stuff I did during the COVID period that I'm going to put together for a small CD for my friend.
Well, you know what? You're going to let me brag a little bit. Do you remember a band called Fog Hat in the 70s?
Oh, come on.
Remember the
rock
and roll band Fog Hat? I was a road
amazing.
Fog Hat and Mother
Spider.
Yeah, I was. I was a road.
Oh, my gosh. Those are amazing bands, and I used to listen to them. Just amazing musicians.
Hey, Gary?
Yeah. Yeah, hey.
You know who Mr. Perez's career pretty much parallels is Jimmy Cook.
A great competitor, yes.
No, not only a great competitor, but a great musician.
Herb, do you know James Cook?
I've heard of him. I've heard of him. No, I don't know him personally.
He was a USA Grand Champion at Kung Fu Stylist, also trained in Taekwondo, a Vietnam veteran. He's an amazing man. Amazing man.
Wow.
AJ loves him as much as I do. But, you know, the thing about James Cook is that we got him out of retirement a few years ago to be in Copter Wars, which is an event that we do every year. Kerbin and Tadashi Yamashita invented. And the gimmick is you have to have 100 first places just to be invited. And James came out of retirement, and he did an amazing job. But, you know, thank you, AJ, for meeting James. He's a great guy. Now, Herb, I don't want you to go anywhere, okay? We're going to do a couple segments here. I hope you enjoy them. And then we're going to come back. We're going to play the Legends name game. This is where I hit you with a name, and you get to talk about them for about 2 minutes, like a fight. And then we'll end the show that way. So we'll be right back, okay?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Super. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking to Mr. Herb Perez, 1992 gold medalist in the World Olympics. Now, I'm excited about the minutes because I get to do something I had a dream about, and it was putting together 6 amazing people around America and let them say their opinions every week. And by the blessing of Jesse Bowen, he's allowed me to do this. And we put together 6 amazing people. One person I'm going to introduce first because she's the lady of the group. She's from New Jersey, but she lives in North Carolina now. She is a PKL champion, trained in Shaolin Karate Do and now Kung Fu. I'm talking about Miss Karen Slatcher. Karen, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Jersey in the house. Hey.
Jersey in the house. There we go. So, listen, Karen, tonight's topic is very simple. Okay, if you had to choose some of the new topics or maybe covers on the new magazines coming out, what would you choose and what topics would you talk about?
I thought about it, and I honestly still would go back to honoring Qigong and the old basic ways of training internally. They don't want to get into that, and Qigong is considered the most powerful martial art there is on the earth, and it's just the old sleeping giant right now. But it can be the difference between winning and losing if you know how to use it. It turns my teacher used to say, it turns your body from a Motel 6 to a Four Seasons. And where do you want to live, in a Motel 6 or a Four Seasons? And through Brett,
I will agree with you, Ms. Slasher.
Thank you. I agree.
And whoever got their radio on, or phone on in the background, please mute it so we can hear Ms. Slasher. But you're exactly right, Ms. Slasher.
Yeah, I would like to see more people, especially young people, taught about the internal ways. I wish I'd had it when I was fighting and when I was doing kata, because the grounding and the meditation is incredible, and it's a different kind of power. And it's kind of getting lost, but I do think it will. I think it's going to be the new yoga someday. People are going to understand it and bring it out. But I would like to see the magazines get behind it and help more people now.
Well, you know, I remember it was in the late 90s when Inside Kung Fu, Dave Cater, they disbanded, rest in peace. And I was there, and I was talking to Mr. Cater. But Inside Kung Fu was the instrument in the early years to talk about Kung Fu and everything. And now I don't think there is a magazine out that does just Kung Fu like Inside Kung Fu does. Do you know?
I haven't seen any. We used to go to Borders and Barnes and Nobles and try to find things there, but no, I haven't seen much.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Karen. Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I believe that's important. And moving right along, another person of the six is very important to me. He is, he is my co-host. He's part of my co-host, Mr. A.J. Perry. A.J., what's your opinion on what should be on the new topics of the magazines coming out now?
Well, one martial art that's seldom even recognized, and some people call it Kido, but it's actually Kudo, is Japanese archery. And the samurai would, and not only samurai, but Mongolians, would shoot archery from horseback. They had a long bow and they had a short bow. The long bow was used because they lasted longer because they didn't bend as much. But that's almost a spiritual martial art that integrates your spirit, almost in an extension of Buddhism, and you never hear about it or read about it.
Yeah.
That's like a lost martial art. Probably one of them because the bows cost a couple grand a piece. But
That movie back in the 70s called Budo? They opened up with an archery sequence with a guy riding on the horse and shooting. It was very, very, very impressive. Yeah.
But that's like a lost martial art.
Yes, yes. Well, thank you, AJ. That's an important topic, important opinion, and I appreciate it so much. Now, moving right along, I've got someone that's very special.
Hey, Gary. I just wanted to know that. Hello?
Yes, sir. Is this Uncle Gary?
Yeah, I just wanted to let you know that I was here.
Okay, buddy. I'm going to introduce you in just a minute, okay? I'm moving on.
Okay, I just wanted to know.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. While you're on the air, let me introduce you. Okay, this man, golly bum, he's such a mentor to me. He is the president of the Black Karate Federation, the co-founder with Ron Chappelle and Cliff Stewart, rest in peace, of the Black Karate Federation. But he worked at Black Belt Magazine in the early years, and he is a direct descendant of the great Joe Louis. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'm talking about the one, the only, Gary Smith, Trainer of Champions. Hey, Uncle Gary, how you doing, buddy?
Fine, fine. I wasn't sure. I thought I got in a little bit late, but I just wanted to know that I was here in case you didn't know it. I apologize to the audience.
I introduced you. You know, and so now I got you in the air. I want your opinion, and this is important, ladies and gentlemen. What are the new topics or the topics you think that should have been on some of these magazines or new magazines coming out? What's your opinion on it?
Well, my opinion is, since I worked for Black Belt Magazine when it was in its heyday, was the human interest stories about Dan Ivan, Chuck Kubota, and other, they would choose a martial artist from, and just do a little story, and you don't see that in the magazines anymore. And secondly, to bring some humor into the magazine, I don't see this as well, at the magazine, you know, being the leading magazine back in the day, a lot of people would show up, you know, literally from all over the world and say, I'm master this guy, that guy, and I'm great, and they would talk to Mito. And Mito would look up their bios and see if they really were who they say they were, and half the time it wasn't. But he would always keep the stories, the story kept. Some of them were so ridiculously almost funny, and we would all laugh about it. So there's this one martial artist, and I'm not going to say his name, on the West Coast, who was very, very famous for breaking tons of ice. And so Mito asked him, he had never met the guy. He walked into the magazine and said he had all these And he said, well, you're a master. He goes, how did you get your master, your 10th degree black belt? And the guy said, well, I had to swim from Santa Monica to out to, hang on for a minute, out to Santa Cruz, and I had to jump in a deep pit and fight a wild boar. And it was just so ridiculous. It was so funny. So Mito called us and he said, this is too funny to just leave between us. And he said, you know what I want to do, Jerry? I go, what? He goes, I want to hire a cartoonist to actually do a cartoon. And we did a cartoon strip every month. I can't remember whether it was in Black Belt or Karate Illustrated or what, but it was one of the main magazines. And it was such a hit because it was fun and it was funny because most of the art.
Jerry, you know, years ago, about 10 years ago, I was approached by a company and we created the Karate Whisperer. It was a cartoon strip where I used a lot of the, you know, the guys in the 70s and the 80s as stars, and we made cartoon characters out of them. And I'll tell you what, I will send you some of the comic strips that were, yeah, they're funny as hell.
I would love
you know,
to
Jerry,
see them.
Yeah, hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny. A lot in martial arts in general, a lot of martial artists take themselves way too seriously. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know, and you're right about the humor. 100%.
We need to have a sense
of humor. Well, it was such, AJ, it was such a hit. It was such a, you know, I mean, from that point on, we hired a cartoonist. I was an illustrator, but I wasn't a cartoonist. A professional cartoonist to come in. It was such a hit. People loved it, and it really made gave the magazine something that we thought it really needed.
Well, you know, it's funny. One time somebody asked me what I had to do for my fifth Dan test, okay, Japanese-style Godan. I told him, I said, I had to eat a refrigerator. It's like the look I got is, like, ridiculous.
Well, you know what, Uncle Jerry, I'm gonna make AJ stand on poison, not poison glass. I'm gonna put rat poison on glass, and the show Saturday I have to stand on it and break boards. And he thinks I'm kidding, but I'm not kidding. But anyway, moving right along.
Well,
thank you, Uncle Jerry. Uncle Jerry Smith.
Oh, you bet.
Your protege is on the line, too. Now, this gentleman is a 10th degree black belt. He's a web designer of the new Sport Karate Museum webpage. I'm talking about the protege and the great, great martial artist, master martial artist in what he does. He's a professor, Tom Spellman. Tom, are you there, buddy?
Yeah, but I don't think I'm going to get through the doorway after that one. But my head's
too big.
Well,
like I said, the check's in the mail. Okay. What do you feel is maybe some new topics or your opinion of maybe something new that could be on the cover or, you know, an article or something of some of these new magazines coming out?
Okay. First of all, thinking of Inslow, who was the artist for Black Belt Magazine in those early days. When they were doing the artwork for the cartoons. That was his byline, his signature. Anyway, being a researcher at heart, I'm inclined to look for martial arts historical articles, things with, you know, origin stories of systems and methods and their creators. And also being the senior student and protector of my three legacies, I'm constantly researching for background information on their systems of study, significant persons, martial arts genealogy, so I can thoroughly educate my students about their arts heritage. History is an ever-evolving subject in about our arts, and the translator is becoming more educated in understanding of the cultures and the languages that are being translated, so we can know more about what they really left behind accurately, so we can educate our beloved practice, future generations. And, you know, It's certainly good that being informed of the current trends and the ever-growing numbers of arts that are available now, as opposed to years past, are worthy of investigation, because there's always valuable ways that we can find to enhance our training, using things and practicing the arts like the Qigong practice is significant, and the Hojo Undo traditions of Hawaiian arts with training equipment, jars and all kinds of other practice things, and weapons too are part of that, and all of that can be exposed more and more in certain magazines. And luckily, I've found magazines here on the West Coast that are, I guess, maybe unique in the sense that they kind of go towards the created Oriental communities, Ongong Fu, and other things that might be available through going online and looking for them by subject, because I have seen that. And also, I remember training Tai Chi Chuan rather than Tai Chi before the 70s when the Cultural Revolution
happened. Right, combat Tai Chi.
Yeah, and that was a totally different experience in Chinatown in L.A. As far as how that was used. So there's so much more to be found and so much more to be included in these magazines besides just the stats and those kinds of things. And so I look forward to that. There's some magazines that are really specializing well with that, like classical martial arts magazines, like the one by Mr. Chambers, and the Tsunami Productions is really, really good. I'm not plugging in, but it's a fabulous book for history from China and from Japan. So that's the things that I look for and would like to see more of, to give us that other piece of the puzzle besides our mental and physical structures that we have inherited from our teachers.
Yes. Well, that's, I think that's important. And, the different variations of magazines. So, for instance, Valve magazine, the Masters, this deals with traditional custody dough. Then, of course, you got some other ones that feature certain different things. What I miss most, Tom? I miss the ratings. I miss also, there used to be a magazine called Official Karate Magazine that used to do my favorite fighting techniques, where they would feature individuals that were, say, popular in the mechanics of tournament karate, and they do feature stories on them. Not just profiles, but they called my favorite fighting techniques. Do you remember that, the Official Karate Magazine?
Yeah, well, originally Black Belt Magazine started that by doing a single thing in the very back of each issue. Joe Lewis was there, other teachers were there, and stuff like that. And then when Official Karate came out, they had not
Barry
only
Campbell
all the
people, Barry
but
Campbell.
They had a whole bunch of people. They had Jerry Pennington featured. They had, all kinds of wonderful guys showing their techniques. And some of that stuff was revolutionary that was being put in those magazines at that time.
Tom? I remember when Cynthia was on the cover, it was me, Robert Halbert, and a man named Stephen Wayne Powell, and we did my favorite fighting techniques. And it really kind of boosted my career, and I loved it. But thank you so much, Tom, for your opinion. And moving right along, this is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. He is Golly Bum. David, are you on the air? Did you make it on the air, David Chambers?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, let me do my introduction of you, buddy. Okay, David Chambers is the president of the AOK. This is the Amateur Organization of Karate, which is the largest sport karate association in Texas. But the heck with that. I mean, that's a big deal. But to me, the big deal is he's won the MVP, the Golden Greek of Texas, over 5 times. It took me 17 years to win it one time. He's won it over 5 times. I'm talking about Mr. David Chambers. David, are you there? What's going on, David?
Yes, sir, I am here.
Well, listen, how do you feel about the new topics, or what should be on the new covers of all these magazines or topics? You got any favorite things you think you'd like to read about?
Well, I have several favorites, and I'm always want to see, you know, who has been innovative in the business part of it. You know, I always want to see who's won the latest title, and that's interesting. But what I believe would be a great additive is if you just go into some cities and into some places and get the person who's teaching martial art, who's actually making a difference in lives. He might not have won this title. He might not have won Greek Award. He might not have won World anything. But if he's actually just teaching 30 students, teaching 20 students, teaching 50 students, but he's doing that on a regular basis, and he's making a change in lives, then what happens is the magazine is no longer just doing a news of what's great and what's, you know, the latest, but it's actually making somebody excited, which makes a group excited, which then all of a sudden I feel that the magazine is giving back. Because if you have someone who's maybe never been in the magazine and they find out that, you know, they feature because they help 5 kids, they help 10 kids, if they find out they feature, that might change that whole little city. They, you know, they might be in a small area. It might change that entire perspective of that person, and then you change their lives. And if a magazine can do sometimes more than just report, but actually also give back, I believe if that happens more, then now the magazine is changing lives like an individual, and then that give back can make a huge difference. I remember a couple of times in reading a few magazines, and they might have one person they featured, and that one person might not have won a lot, but it was featured, and he's telling everybody, man, this is the first time I've been on a magazine. Look at your mom. Look at your sister. Look at your brother. And that brought him up to a different level, which made him help more people. So sometimes just the giving back, I think, is be a great additive to magazines.
What? That's a great, great, great opinion, Dee, and I appreciate it so much that you would share that, because it's true. We can just make a person's life better by letting people know what he's done, especially if he's just teaching kids, you know, because I know you're a big kid advocate. In fact, your tournament, Christmas in May, coming up, you did what I did too, and we did it together, not together in the same tournament, but in different tournaments, where you give away bicycles to kids. Now, you got an event coming up. What is it exactly? May what?
That's May 7th for virtual and May 14th for in-person. So if you can't fly to me, you know, you can be there in virtual. But the bicycle day is May 14th, and we're in Houston, Texas. And I have people this year, first time ever, people donate bicycles. And I've never had personal people come in and say, I want to donate 3 bicycles. I want to donate 5 bicycles.
There you go.
And that is something I've never had before. A couple of my students initiated that, and I'm really excited about it. They said, oh, yeah, I can help in that area. And so we're going to make several kids happy on May the 14th.
Well, that's exciting. You know, well, thank you, Dee. Now, my last person of the 6 is my co-host, put it with me for the past 6-7 years. And he is Mr. Dean Piles. Dean, are you there, buddy?
Yes, I'm here. Hang on just a second,
okay,
sir. I'm
what topic,
getting off of the floor.
What topics would you like to see in the new magazine that's coming out?
Well, I mean, you know, I like to see a variety of things. Like, you know, I like to see the ratings, who's winning in competition, you know, and you know, stuff that is inspiring. You know, when I think of stuff that is inspiring, I like to think of stuff that martial arts has helped people overcome. But I also know that, you know, a lot of people look at, and I know that there's always a lot of stuff about champions, but, you know, champions really inspire people a lot, because people see that and they're like, well, I want to be like this person. So it causes them to go to the gym and work harder, to try to dig in to find, you know, what they can do. Now, that's coming from a, you know, competitor point of view, but also you know, just like I say, inspiring stories of someone that may have been bullied and they went to an instructor and they got them past that and you know, they overcome or confronted their bully. But how martial arts has changed their life, that, you know, like Ms. Slash was talking about Qigong. I use Qigong to help combat my diabetes. And, you know, when I first told the doctor that what I was doing, when I told him I hadn't been taking my insulin, he got really upset. He said, what have you been doing? I said, well, I've been praying and doing Qigong. So, you know, some of that stuff of what people can do. But one thing I would like to see in the martial arts magazines, because, you know, I train a lot of full contact fighters that do kickboxing and MMA, but I like to have articles by people that have actually know how to turn point karate or point martial arts or sport karate and use it for MMA. And not only that, but to let people know that MMA, karate didn't derive from MMA. MMA derived from karate and how that actually works. And if you've got a good teacher, they can show you the techniques that are in there because they're not using anything different, if you understand what I'm trying to say.
Right, right.
You know.
Thank you, Dean. I appreciate that. And, you know, don't go too far because I got to bring your alias back here in a few minutes, the Wolverine. Now, also, ladies and gentlemen, that's the six. These are incredible six people all across America, from California to the East Coast. You know, I mean, I'm excited about doing this segment every week. And we talk about topics that maybe sometimes you don't want to talk about, but they need to be talked about. But we talk, we try to deal with them, and we deal with them every week on the 6th. Now, moving right along, another segment that we do here on the radio show, we've done it for almost a year now. We've introduced virtual reality and the concept of what this man, this inventor, Dr. Reginald Lee, has put together with another gentleman, Rick Shanahan. And virtual reality on the headset of the Oculus Quest 2. Now, this is amazing because we not only created a village at the hologram attacks you, but the History General portals. And tonight I have the inventor with me, Dr. Reginald Lee. Reggie, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir. Good evening. How are you doing today?
Explain and as you can, what SetVR is, please.
Sure, definitely. We at SetVR, Self-Defense Enhancement Training in Virtual Reality, are planning to release many updates soon to include updates on the portal, history portal, whereby we will be introducing some of the history journals on the History Portal Museum in Virtual Reality. We at SetVR continue to be super excited about SetVR, Self-Defense Enhancement Training in Virtual Reality, as a platform where one can continue to practice their skills in self-defense anytime, anywhere, when they want. The program is portable and compact, and you can take it anywhere you travel, and even during a pandemic, to continue to practice your skills in self-defense while practicing social distancing. With the Oculus Rift or Oculus Quest headset, you'll be transported to a virtual reality platform whereby a hologram will confront and attack you when you least expect it with random attacks. The goal of SetVR is to have you to be able to neutralize an attack or a threat that is sudden, unpredictable, and random, to be able to practice to improve your skills in evasion through angular, linear, or circular movements to avoid and place you into an opportunity position of an advantage for neutralization as you practice to improve your skills in timing, speed, accuracy, as you develop muscle memory, and my goal to develop a reflex response to a threat or a stimulus to neutralize without hesitation, as you would with a knee jerk or placing your hand on a hot stove. This is a platform where you can practice your skills, utilize what you've been taught in katas and forms in your dojos in a program for application against a stimulus or a threat that is random attack, to practice anywhere, anytime, when you want. We've implemented a program of mindfulness, of stretching, meditation exercise, and we'll also present you with your own personal yoga instructor. We will continue to update SetVR in the future to help you to practice to maximize the application of self-defense when you want and where you want. So please continue to visit our website at setvr.app. That's SETVR.app. We continue to be proud to endorse Professor Gary Lee and the Sports Karate Museum to be the future platform of his vision of the History Portal. whereby we have where SetVR has introduced Professor Gary Lee as the Wisdom Warrior in the History Portal demo at the entrance into the History Portal. But before meeting the Wisdom Warrior, one must neutralize the hologram attacker at the gate of the History Portal. With that being said, Professor Gary, some few words about your vision about the History Portal.
Well, I'm excited, and this is an introduction of something I had a vision for many years, but because of SetVR, I can actually apply it. Imagine going into your portal, and as you walk through the portal, it's the history of that person from point A to point B, what they've contributed to sport karate in America. Now, we're going to start with a core group, Mr. George Minshew, Chris Minshew, Mr. Roy Kerman, and Mr. Mike Dillard. And all four of these people have given something very, very personal to sport karate. As you know, Mike Dillard created Century Martial Arts and is the owner of Black Belt Magazine. George Minshew introduced the Karate Olympics point tournament and introduced the first ring given out as a gold ring for a champion. Chris Minshew was the NBL world champion point karate, and golly bum, I was lucky enough to be a point fighter for 45 years, and we're going to introduce the History General portal so that one History General will be added monthly. So eventually, all the History Generals of the Sport Karate Museum will be at these portals. After you defeat the hologram, you'll be able to learn about all these incredible people. And this is setvr.app. And you can go to Google. That's right. Go to Google and just type in SETVR.APP. And you can see the demo of what Dr. Lee just talked about. Reggie, thank you for being on the air and introducing the portals and everything you've done. I really appreciate you and Rick and Marie very much. And all the inventors, Vince and Nick and Day and everybody. They mean a lot. So thank you, Reggie.
Thank you, sir.
Well, our last segment of our show is something I really enjoy. And this is the Wolverine spot. We call it 3 minutes with the Wolverine. This is when we take off the leash. He gets to say what he says, means what he says. He can back it up. And, you know, he's kind of a rodent. If you don't know what a rodent is, it's someone that, well, they were the runaway samurai who broke away from samurai. Wolverine is definitely a rodent. Wolverine, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir, right here.
Okay, now be nice. But who would the Wolverine like to see on any cover of magazines? Anybody particularly?
No, but I would like to see maybe some, like combative stuff. Stuff that actually works. I get so much stuff sent to me where I train the military. I have stuff sent to me all the time in my emails. What do you think about this technique? What do you think about that? And it really surprises me on how many people teach things that I don't know if they just don't are not aware of that would not work in the real world, or if they just drink the Kool-Aid, or if they just teach it because it sells, you know. But I would like to see, you know, stuff that is practical and it's things that really work. And, you know, it's crazy because what people don't realize is in a real attack, things work a lot different than they do in a sport competition or, you know, even a grounded competition. Like, you know, one of the guys that's in the movie with me, my co-star, Mr. Dan Severin, is a great friend of mine. Dan Severin is a large individual. You know, when he fought Royce Gracie, and he slid Horace Gracie around in the ring for nearly an hour or more. You know, now imagine that 260-pound man on top of a 170-pound man on asphalt sliding you around on your back for an hour. What do you think the guy on the bottom would look like after about an hour? Do you see what I'm saying? Realism. He would be ground to nothingness. I mean, and yeah. I'm a wordsmith, too, by the way. You might not have known that, Professor, but training in the military gives you that, you know, you can just make up words on the fly, you know. So,
right.
Just kidding. But, you know, I like to see stuff like that. But, you know, I'm really, you know, whatever they put out, you know, I like to see. Some things, sometimes, you know, like you say, things get monotonous or they, you know, they just comment on one thing or talk about one thing. So, you know, I like to see, like I say, variety of things, and I like to see stuff that's going to be applicable in the real world, techniques and things like that, you know.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense, Wolverine, and I appreciate it.
Gary?
On the show.
Gary.
AJ, you keep interrupting. What's your problem, buddy?
Too bad. Too bad. I'm a co-host. You know, I wouldn't call him a Ronin, you know? Honest, Scott, I wouldn't never call Dean a Ronin because Ronin translated means wave man. That means they have no direction, no, they're a masterless warrior. And Dean was always loyal to Master Lewis, and Dean's got direction.
Get back,
I wouldn't call
Dean,
him a Ronin.
You just got complimented by a Korean guy. What do you think about that?
I appreciate that because, you know, I mean, I started in Korean martial arts in Chundakwan Taekwondo. And so, you know, I appreciate the, you know, the Korean compliments, you know, because our head of that organization was Grandmaster Won Kuk Lee, you know, that lived up near Washington. You know, so I appreciate, you know, I appreciate anything like that.
Well, cool.
I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cool. Thank you, AJ, and thank you, Wolverine. And now I'd like to bring back my special guest. Herb, are you there, buddy?
Yes, sir.
Wow, we get kind of crazy there for a few minutes. I apologize, but I love it.
No,
so, Herb, we're going to play the Legends Endgame to close out the show. I'm going to hit you with a couple names, and you can talk about it for about 2 minutes, and then we'll go on. So the first name I'm going to hit you with is a very friend, and I'm excited about honoring her this year, Arlene Lemus. What do you think about Arlene?
You know, Arlene, I was fortunate that I met Arlene when she first tried to enter the arena in our sport. And Arlene was an innovative young woman who was very passionate about what she did. And she did what she did so well that she came into an arena where she shouldn't have won and was able to dominate it, and not only dominate it, but became one of the first Americans, actually one of the first women in the world to ever beat Korea, and more importantly, to beat Korea at the Olympic Games in Korea. So when I met Arlene, there was this, you can tell a story, when I was coaching her, she was sitting at an event, and I went over to her to give her some advice, and I said, Arlene, you really need to knock this person out. And she refused to do it because she realized she was so much better than the individual that she was fighting that she wouldn't hit the woman and knock her out. She didn't need to. And I found that to be an interesting juxtaposition of the martial arts, of what we do as martial artists and what we do as competitors, because that's always been a dichotomy that's fascinated me. We're taught never to hurt or take advantage of someone else, yet when we enter the arena, we don't really have a choice because of the nature of the sport. But Arlene was so good at what she did back then and so unique that she could choose not to use all of her capability. And in fact, she just did enough to win because she felt like she didn't need to do much more than that. So I've always had a lot of
respect for her. Well, you know what? She humbled me in 1982 at the Lama Nationals, and I took second place to her against her double nunchuck kata. She beat
me. Oh, no kidding.
Yes.
I didn't know she did forms. Yeah,
she did double nunchuck kata, and she beat me, and I think it was Janae Frenay. I forgot who it was. But anyway, she did a double nunchuck kata. She was good. Then that night, she beat Linda Denley for $500. I'll never forget that.
Wow.
She used to give Linda a bad time, and not many women could do that because Linda Denley is a badass. But Arlene would give her Arlene had that ridge hand, man. She had that hook kick. That was incredible. You know, she had this.
She was a good fighter. She still is. Still
yes, she was. And I'm going to hit you one more name. Okay. Toki Hill, who is a very good friend.
Oh.
He'll be there in October. you know, and I got a special surprise for you in October too, besides Tokyo. But tell me how you feel about Tokyo.
Well, you know, he was just like most of the people on the phone when they talk about the magazines and the impact it had on them and how we learned about what was going on in our arena and in the world of martial arts. I read magazines, and one of the first things that I read back then was about Toki Hill and how he had been the first American to win that international event. And so I actually was amazed by him, and kind of there were a couple of individuals that I idolized who had gone outside the box and done something very unique. Mike Swain being another. Mike Swain won the world championship the same year I did. And Toki Hill. So I actually called up when I was on the U.S. Olympic Committee Board of Directors, and I had the opportunity to speak with Toki Hill, Master Hill, about his desire to get his organization into the U.S. Olympic Committee, because I was on the Games Preparation Committee. So I was – there were three organizations back then, one of which Master Hill was the lead person in. I think he was president at the time. So I got the opportunity to first call him and tell him about, thought about him and how I come to know of him and how I kind of idolized and looked up to him. And then I had the good fortune to listen to a little bit about the goals of their organizations, because back then there were three different karate organizations, one out of Seattle, Master Hill's out of Ohio, and then another group, I want to say, out of New York. And I just thought that Toki Hill had the right feeling for the sport, had the right ideas, and just had a passion for it, because he had been a competitor. And I'm always favoring people who had competed and then decide to go into the administration to try to help others achieve their same dreams. So just an amazing individual.
Well, I got a name for you. I got a name for you. Juan Marino.
Oh.
AJ, are you interrupting me again?
That's my job.
Juan Moreno. So I'll give you guys a preview. And then
and Joe
so
Kim.
Juan Moreno. Joe Kim, of course. So I could tell you two stories about both in one breath. And Juan Moreno came to us at the same time as Arlene Lemus, because they were both from Chicago, the Chicago area. And so when I met Juan, he was trying to be a good friend of mine. And before that, I liked him. And so I was trying to help him, and we became good friends because he realized I was actually trying to help him, even though the team captain was a friend of mine. And same with Arlene. We were rooming at the Olympic Training Center. And you'll remember he had a very unique haircut. And the reason was my teammate, Kevin Padilla, wanted asked him to help him cut his hair. Kevin wasn't a very good hair cutter with clippers, and he cut a hole, a literal hole, in the back of Juan's head and down to a bald spot. So he came in and looked at me, and he goes, listen, I'm going to show you something, but no matter what you do, please don't laugh. Don't laugh. So Juan comes in, he goes, Xiang, which is, you know, Korean for big brother. He says, how's it look? And he turns around. I go, he shows me the front, and I go, oh, it looks okay. Then he turns around, and there's this huge hole in the back of his head, and I just couldn't help but laugh. So I said, no, no. So we got our good friend Dave Britton, who was an Olympic cycler, and he had this haircut where he shaved his entire head except for the top, stuck it straight up in the air, and then dyed the outside of it gold. So Juan, that's the haircut Juan has at the Olympics, which was an accident by that. Fast forward to after the Olympics in 1989, Juan Moreno and I, Joe Kim, I'm captain of the team, we're in Puerto Rico, and Joe Kim's on the team. So Joe Kim breaks curfew. And so I find out, and I'm captain, I have to kind of deal with it. So I say to Joe, I said, you know, what happened? You know, and he said, sir, I'm sorry. You know, we were on the beach, and these guys held us up. They had knives, and they took Juan's sister's money and wallet, and I couldn't do anything, and that's why I was late. So I said, oh, okay, sir. So fast forward a year or two later, I find out Joe Kim and Juan Moreno's sister, Gina, are dating, and the story was false. They were actually hanging out. Now fast forward to now, and Joe Kim is, as you know, a very famous defensive coach for a number of teams, and most recently, defensive team. He was the coach and went to the Super Bowl with the Patriots. So
right. He did a great job for himself.
Well, by the way, nicest guy in the world. He was adopted by a Korean family. His father was my original trucker. Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he was.
Nicest guy in the world.
Thank you for being on the show tonight. It means
a lot, sir. I always talk too much. I apologize. But thank you for having me.
You don't talk too much. AJ talks too much. So that's cool. But anyway, we love everybody. We love you, AJ.
Great interview.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for being on the show tonight and sharing your experiences. And remember, October 8th is the Roy Kerman's tribute in Houston, Texas. And Herb will be there, and Toki will be there. And I've got a very special surprise for you, Herb. They'll be there also.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not going to say her name. I'm not going to say her name. But, ladies and gentlemen, as we say every week, and we mean it from the heart, mahalo and aloha. Thank you, Herb. Thank you, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Good night.